Hi, welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics, and in this podcast, we give you expert advice, soulful conversations, and practical strategies that you can put into play to start transforming your sex life. Come on over to pleasuremechanics.com to find our complete podcast archive, as well as all of our online resources that are ready and waiting to serve you. Definitely sign up for the Erotic Essentials, our free online course that is a treasure trove of resources and a way that you can join our online community and start being in touch with us. Also check out our erotic mastery courses when you are ready to up-level your sex life, learn new skills with us like couples massage, foreplay mastery, anal play, kinky sex, erotic spanking. Whatever erotic adventure you want to embark on next, we are excited to be your guides. All of this and more can be found at pleasuremechanics.com and use the code SPEAKINGOFSEX for 20% off the online course of your choice. Okay, so on this episode, we are going to be answering a question submitted by a listener that allows us to paint a picture for you about how you can introduce new sexual skills, new sexual ideas, experiences into your relationship in a more strategic way than just springing something new on your unsuspecting lover or triggering their anxiety, which is what happens in this listener's question. So Charlotte's going to get us started by reading the question and then we will dive in.
I am a 36-year-old woman and have been with my husband for almost 10 years. We have a decent sex life, but it is just boring. We do the same 5 things every time, almost always in the same order. I have orgasms and everything, but I'm just not excited by it. I try to bring in new things, but when I do, my husband gets really anxious and goofy, cracking jokes and totally getting me out of the mood. Help! I can't deal with the idea of a lifetime of the same sex over and over again. I think this is a really common experience.
So common. And it's interesting, Esther Perel brought this up in our interview, but I think the culture has an idea that men want variety. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that's true in terms of like variety of faces and body types. But the idea that's emerging now is that women are the ones that want creativity and variety and novelty and new kinds of erotic experiences. Women are the ones that get bored more easily. And that is true from the letters we receive, for sure.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting and exciting new way of seeing women's sexuality, that it's actually really nuanced and it does get kind of bored if things are not kept interesting, and that's sometimes when libido goes.
Right, and
which is a different story than we tell culturally.
And so many people get into ruts, get into routines. When they say they do the same 5 things, I'm imagining that that's not bondage, puppy play, foot worship, you know, like the same 5 things that most people do, or something like kissing, breast touch,
a little oral sex.
Yeah. Maybe a little bit of a hand job, then you go into intercourse. And, you know, it's like, it's that script that we see played out over and over again that people almost, and we have the bases as kids, we talk about rounding the bases. I think a lot of people somehow think that this is how sex is supposed to go. It's like we've all been handed the script. We don't know who wrote it or on what terms. But even if it includes female orgasm, which is awesome.
Yeah.
That's kind of a bonus to the standard script. If it includes him going down on her or touching her or using the vibrator in order to get enough clitoral stimulation for the female orgasm to be part of the script, a script where you can kind of predict where your sex is going to go every time takes so much excitement out of the erotic experience. And this is a piece that we don't talk about very often, but one of the things that's fun about sex is the mystery. Is the not knowing what's going to happen? Is the discovering new things, new sensations, new ways your bodies can move together, new personas, new parts of yourself? And again, Esther Perel in her book, The State of Affairs, talked about a lot of people have affairs not because there's anything wrong with their relationship, but because they want to discover or activate a new part of themselves.
Which is so profound.
Right. And so how do we do that within a relationship? How do we constantly allow new parts of our erotic personality, our erotic imagination to be emerging and have a sex life within a long-term relationship be this open-ended playground that you're going to explore together over the years? How do we do that? What are the skills involved in introducing new things? And then the second part in this question is getting anxious and goofy, the making jokes. Like, what is that about? And people have a lot of different reactions to their partner initiating new skills. Sometimes people feel just shut down and shy and kind of just go into, oh no, I don't want to do that. And they just deflect and push it away. Some people, they kind of pretend like, oh, I already know how to do that, so I'll give you a spanking even though I've never done it before and I've never really thought about it, but like, I can do that. Like, they get a false sense of confidence and then end up not really doing it very well, thwarting a lot of opportunity there by kind of pretending that they know how to do it already. And other people get anxious or start getting silly. And the goofiness, I think, is tied to the anxiousness. Like, when someone asks you to do something, you feel vulnerable. Making a joke out of it is one way to stay safe.
Yeah, it's a great strategy in general, but it's just not a turn-on in this particular situation.
So instead, we want to suggest a model of learning new sexual skills together, trying new sexual experiments out in a model based on the scientific method.
Ha!
We're going to call it the sex lab. Creating a space within your erotic life together where you are going to run experiments and see what happens, and approach it from this place of, we don't know what's going to happen for either of us. We are curious about the outcome. So we are going to create a little experiment, try something new, and then see what happens and gather more information for the next time.
So this is a separate space from having sex. In a way.
It's a way of having sex.
It's a way of having sex, but it's an intentional other space.
Right.
Which I think is part of its glory, because you're really making room to have these conversations of, does that feel good? Well, try this a little bit differently. Or it's a space where there's so much permission for conversation.
Right. You're not both trying something new and trying to, like, create a whole erotic experience for one another and pretend that you already know how to do it when it's a totally new sexual skill. And the new sexual skill can be anything from, I want to touch your butthole for the first time. Like, we want to bring in some anal stimulation because one of us is interested in that. It could be a new persona. Like, we want to try role playing and I want to try some power play. And I want to be a little more demanding and aggressive with you and how that is going to feel. Or it could be something like spanking, bondage, a kink that you want to explore. And there's a whole galaxy of sexual options to explore.
Or learning more about what turns you on in terms of female orgasm or whatever. Like, I think this is also partly how people use our videos.
Right, right. It could just be what part of your clitoris feels the best to touch in what ways.
And let's just explore that. Let's try this out over here. Let's really talk about it, as opposed to when you're kind of just more in the sex realm where
you're trying to create an experience and go somewhere together, right? And this is, if we want to switch metaphors really quickly, it's the difference between doing drills with a basketball and doing those free throws over and over again versus playing a game of basketball.
Right.
And the more you practice your skills, then when you're in the game, you can hit that flow. Another way of talking about this is explicit versus implicit learning. Explicit versus implicit skills. And in the learning community, what this means is, when something's an explicit skill, your body, your brain is still doing it on purpose. You're learning how to do it, and so you have to pay attention and do it on purpose. And it uses a different part of your brain than when something becomes an implicit skill and you can do it without thinking about it. Right? Like when you crack an egg, you don't really think, okay, now I'm going to hold the egg, and now I'm going to tap the egg, and now I'm going to crack the egg, and now I'm going to put the shell on the counter. You can just pick up an egg and crack an egg because you've done it 100 times. And in the sex world, things have to be explicitly learned before they can just become part of your game. And we can think about this easily with something like bondage. The first time you tie a chest harness with rope, you have to learn the knots, you have to learn how the rope falls, you have to learn how to do it. And that is an explicit learning opportunity. And someone who's tied 100 chest harnesses can do it while having a conversation. But when we think about things like hand jobs or clitoral stimulation or anal sex, we don't often give ourselves the opportunity for that explicit learning period. It's supposed to be something we just know how to do.
Which is so unfair and false and sets everyone up to feel a bit overwhelmed and underwhelmed. And let's be gentle with ourselves and create an intentional space where we can just learn.
Right. And so if you can set aside time in the sex lab to learn, okay, these are all the parts of your vulva. This is all the different ways I can stimulate them. These are all the different levels of pressure and speeds of pressure, and I'm going to try it out and we're going to experiment and see what you like. Then the next time you're just having sex, your hands have all that new information. And one of the things that's really important here is to break things down so you're doing one experiment at a time. And this is something that our kinky sex mastery really lays out, like how to break down the kinky sex skills one at a time. And something I really learned when I was going into kink is that you can't just show up and know how to be dominant, know how to give orders, know how to flog, know how to put someone in bondage, know how to, you know, like aftercare, all of these different skills of one kinky sex scene. You take workshops for each one of those. You learn, you break it down into each individual skill. So, because if a couple is just like, all right, let's have kinky sex tonight and you be a top and you tie me up and you do this, you don't really know what went well and what went wrong.
Right? Or what wasn't as good as good it could have been.
Right. Like a scientific experiment tests one variable at a time, you know, so they know what happened to that mouse and what caused that outcome as much as possible. Not to bring animal experimentation into this. We are pro animal. But you know what I mean? Like they test one thing at a time. And one of the reasons the scientific journey is so slow is because they have to isolate variables. And so we can learn from this in our sex life is isolate variables, try one thing at a time, and that's going to give you a really rich environment in order to say, oh, I really liked that one thing you were doing, but the way that this felt didn't really work well, so let's carry that one thing forward, leave this other thing behind. You know, you get to have that data to roll forward into your sex life.
Part of what I love about bringing this framework to our sex life is it's just this really separate space where the person who sent this letter into us talked about how anxious the husband gets. And it is kind of stressful to bring in new things without having talked about what your hopes and expectations are or what turns you on about this. All these conversations are really important to have so that the experience can go well. So creating this entirely different framework just sets you up for success.
Well, one of the things that triggers anxiety in people is imagining the worst case scenario. And so this happens a lot when people ask for something new in bed. Their lover's mind jumps to possible consequences and worst case scenarios. And that can look a lot of different ways. So if you are in a relationship and you're like, I want to have rougher sex. Let's have rougher sex tonight. Pin me down and fuck me hard. Okay, so then your partner is like presented with all this new information in the moment while they may be already aroused. And they don't know, like, what does hard mean? What does pin you down mean? Do you want to be tied up? What if I do it wrong and your circulation gets cut off? I knew a friend who lost the key to the handcuffs. Like, their mind can start spinning into all of these possible scenarios. And we lose present moment focus. We lose that presence to be able to connect with one another. And we also worry about, what if I hurt my partner? What if I do this wrong and then feel humiliated? What if she really wants this and I don't like it and then we'll lose our relationship? This is what anxiety looks like. And anyone that experiences any level of anxiety knows these kind of quick cycle firing of the brain neurons, which is like, let me dump all of the possible worst case scenarios on you all at once, and then you have to act from that place. That is not a good place to act out of in your bedroom. And being goofy is one way of covering that up. And you're like, oh, I'm your big bad top, and I'm gonna pin you down, lady. And that's just not sexy.
For some people.
Right? Humor is sexy, but when it's covering up anxiety and you just kind of start cracking jokes of like, oh, are you going to call me Christian Grey now? It's like, no, honey. Okay, come on. Right? So, like, I know that place because I've been there. Mm. And quick story. So my first relationship in college was my first, like, big love affair. It was the first, like, beautiful, consensual, like, we are dating because we are into each other and we just, like, you know, we programmed things on campus together and we ran a magazine together and we were just, like, in love and young and queer, and it was awesome.
It was fun, yeah.
And we both emerged into our kinkiness together. And she wanted to be submissive, and so therefore I had to be the dominant, even though I had no idea what I was doing. And we started reading kinky erotica together. And she would, like, highlight passages and then tell me, like, this is what I find hot. And then I would take those erotica books and be like, okay, so I need to, you know, so, and then I tried to enact those erotica stories. I had no idea what I was doing. I had no training. And it was kind of a disaster. Like, I ended up doing things that then, like, triggered her trauma history. And then she would get really shut down. And I felt totally upset and humiliated. And I just remember the anxiety of, like, when she would ask for a kinky date. And I would have to do all the preparation and and she was just, like, ready to, like, be submissive and receive. And I felt so much pressure to perform and to live up to this standard that was in these erotica, which isn't even real. It's someone's fantasy. And we kind of hit a wall with this. And this is when we started going into New York City and going to workshops and meeting other people in the sex community and getting training. And we found mentorship. And all of a sudden, I didn't have to be that big, bad top. I could be someone learning. Mm. And we would go to these events where there was, like, circuits set up around the room. And so you could walk up to someone who knew really well how to use a flogger and say, teach me how to use a flogger. I'm going to watch you use it, or I'm going to see how it feels on my body. And I started building my skills one at a time. And then a few years into it, I could step into that role as a dominant and do kinky sex with people with a lot of confidence. But without that support and without that learning, I would have just been flailing. And we were in, you know, a college sweetheart relationship. If this had been a marriage and my wife is looking at me with all this desire and readiness, I can just imagine how much pressure that puts on guys. And that, or women whose guys are like, I want, you know, and it's not only the dominant, the submissive has a lot of skills to learn. And this is way beyond kinky sex. I'm just using this as a really clear example. Because kinky sex, there's so many individual skills to really learn. But that's true about the most vanilla of sex too. Right? And so this can happen with something as simple as asking for what you want in bed. So you can set aside time and say, we are going to practice making and receiving requests. So for 30 minutes, I am available to touch you. Okay, I'm going to set a timer for 1 minute. What do you want me to do to you? Stroke your hair. Okay, I'm going to stroke your hair for 1 minute. Does that feel good? Do you want me to go slower? Oh, okay, I'm going to go even slower.
Would you like me to press harder? Right. Or is this...
Yeah. Timer's up. Would you like me to continue stroking your hair? Or is there something else your body would like? And it sounds clinical, but by playing that game for 30 minutes, 1 minute at a time, and walking each other through that experience, you're going to get so much information about each other, and it creates this non-pressure environment to learn this skill. Or you want to explore bondage. Okay, you're going to set aside half an hour on a Friday night, and you're going to put on the cuffs, and then you're going to get in different positions. You're not even going to have sex. You're just going to play with the cuffs. Oh, do you like the clip in between the cuffs? How does your shoulder joint feel? I know you have an injury in your shoulder. Like, can you get in this position? How does this feel after 5 minutes? And you can learn that skill together just as a fun thing to learn together without either person feeling the pressure of, I have to do this right, I have to know what I'm doing, I have to meanwhile create all this arousal and some orgasm in there. You know, it's like it takes all that pressure off and you get to have these little sex labs together.
I think that is so inspiring and exciting. Like, what would long-term relationships look like if, like, just once a month, you together were like, let's just have a sex lab. Let's play sex lab, however you want to talk about mm-hmm. it. Where you're like, what should we learn this time? What should we focus on? What are you mm-hmm. most interested in, like, developing in our sex life? Like, it's such a good way of clearly developing more skills together and keeping things fresh and interesting. And unintimidating, because it's just like you're playing, you're experimenting, you're exploring, and you're being intentional. I just love it. Mm-hmm. Like, what would all relationship, what would happen? Mm-hmm. It's a really exciting notion, because it's so doable. It's right. so doable. Like, let's take half an hour.
Yeah.
What do we want to get better at?
Mm-hmm.
What do we want to really talk through so we can improve and just feel a little better and more confident and interested in? Oh, it's just so thrilling.
So a sex lab, you set your experimentation. Uh-huh. So you set your variable. We want to develop communication. We want to explore the clitoris. We want to explore anal play. We want to explore bondage. Like, what is your intention? What are you focusing on? You spend half an hour, 2 hours, a weekend, right? Like, the experiments can last different amounts of time. And then an important part of the process is discussion afterwards.
Yeah.
So looking at the data together, and it's important to kind of finish what you're doing, and then you can go and have a meal together, a glass of wine, smoke some pot, go on a walk with your dog, like whatever you do, and have the opportunity to talk about what happened. And in a space where you're not making accusations, you're not evaluating someone's performance, but you're just saying, you know, when I was in bondage and my hands were above my head, that didn't feel as good to me as when they were behind my back. So maybe we should start there next time. Or I really noticed my shoulder got a little funky when I was on my hands and knees for too long. So let's notice that. Or harder things like, when you said this to me, it made me feel less sexy than when you said this to me. It's just data analysis. It's not making any kind of evaluations or accusations. And then receiving that feedback, if you were the one doing or you're the one that receiving the feedback on how you did something, just as data, right? And this is where we need to respond rather than react. Well, you didn't tell me that at the time. Like, that's not going to serve you well. Or, you know, well, you know, if you were in better shape, then you could be in that position longer, right? Like, you don't want to react with something hurtful out of defensiveness. And these, you know, I'm giving you examples. We hope you don't treat each other this way. And we need to acknowledge that when we're feeling vulnerable, when we're feeling like defensive, we can say nasty things. And we want to instead create a culture in our relationship where you can say, thank you so much for telling me that. That makes a lot of sense. Now we know. Right? This a compassionate response is what I'm hearing you say, that you don't like being called a dirty slut. Is that accurate? Right? So reflecting back what you think you heard and getting their response. Well, I like being called a dirty slut, but not a dirty whore. Oh, okay. That's a nuance. But what is it about the word whore? Right? So then you can get into this conversation. And this is how we get to know each other over the long term and reveal new parts of ourselves to our partner in a way that's not going to trigger so much anxiety and vulnerability that it's safer to have the standard scripted sex. Because I think that's what happens in a lot of relationships, right? It's a safer default setting to do what you know works, to be in the positions that you know work, you know, to never go outside that box because that box is safe.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know why I'm bringing her up so much, but Esther Perel, again, so I'm in like an online training with her, so I get a lot of Esther in my life these days. But she says she often sees couples where one time during sex, he reached up to choke, you know, to put his hand on her throat. And she said, oh, what are you doing? And pushed his hand away. And he never brought any of his kinkiness up again. Right? The perceived safety gets so small. and the shame of it. And this is where shame comes in, because you say, if I reveal this part of myself, I might lose this love. I might lose this good thing we have going. So this comes up around like anal and prostate a lot. How many men have we heard from over the years that I really want to explore prostate stimulation? I love touching my butt during masturbation, but I would never dare ask my wife out of fear of what she would say. How would she would perceive me? She would think I was gay. It goes on and on. Whereas if you could do a sex lab and just say, like, let's just touch the outside of your butthole and see how that feels for both of us. And then she's like, oh, that gets you really turned on. And I feel really powerful and sexy when I turn you on so much. New world opened. Right? Or if questions come up, oh, I'm touching your butthole, but I'm a little bit worried about poo. Like, we need to learn more about this before I go inside. Great. Next inquiry set. Right? It's a new way of approaching your sex life where you're not just like spilling your guts out and being so vulnerable with each other that you're risking all of the safety and love and trust that you have. You're just doing little baby steps into new erotic realms and seeing how they feel, seeing how it goes, collecting data, and using that to determine where you go next.
So unintimidating, so clear, so permissive, and so interesting.
All right, so that is the idea of a sex lab. We hope that is useful for you. We hope that you are excited about this idea. If you need any more guidance, we hope we've made this process clear for you, and I'll have more information on the show notes page for this podcast episode at pleasuremechanics.com. If you have any questions or need some more guidance, we are always here for you. Use our contact form on pleasuremechanics.com, or better yet, join the Erotic Essentials, become part of our online community, and you can ask us questions right there in the course, and we will get back to you. And let us know how this goes for you. I want to know what sex labs you do and what the outcomes are, my dear sexy scientists. All right, I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics.
Wishing you a lifetime of pleasure.
Cheers.